In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
If your intention is to commit fraud, there is an easy, simple way to do it. Make things complicated. The more complicated something is, the easier it becomes to hide what's actually happening. With a lot of moving parts, interrelated systems, and the number one means, make it hard for people to look. Make it complicated to look. Because if there is no fraud, they would welcome your scrutiny. Here's the checkbook. Take a look. And if you find fraud, for heaven's sakes, let us know. We have a sacred duty to protect taxpayer dollars. But they don't do that. They make things complicated and say you can't look. Take, for example, our voting rolls. Right now, there are multiple lawsuits where states are pushing back against the federal government, which is asking states to provide basic information about who is on the voter rolls. That should be simple. How many people are in your state? How many people are citizens? And of those citizens, how many are registered to vote? Because we have a sacred duty to protect our elections and to make sure only citizens vote, and only vote once, and only vote in one state. But states are pushing back because they don't want to provide that simple, straightforward data. They act as if the federal government has no right to obtain it, no right to look. Imagine telling the IRS, oh, you can't look at our books. Everything is fine. You'll just have to trust us. When you complicate something that ought to be simple, like a database, it opens the door to fraud, even if that's not your intention. Allegedly not your intention. Because here's how voter rolls ought to work. Simply, the federal government maintains a single database of every person living in the United States. The various columns would include their name, their social security number, whether someone is a citizen, yes or no, the address where they live, and the state where that address is. States can then access that database and append data to it. This person with this social security number has this voter ID and they live at this address in our state, or they're currently living overseas, serving in the military, and so on. Problem solved. We know where everybody lives, we know where everybody ought to be voting, and if there are multiple instances of that person, then guess what? There's your problem. Simple. Government, like businesses using shell companies, can further complicate things by hiding the end recipient of money, by hiding it behind a shield of nonprofits. You, the taxpayer, can see money going in, but you can't see who a nonprofit getting hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars then gives that money to. And even if they open their books just a little, it's still complicated because they can say, oh, that $1 million we got from taxpayers, we spent that on office space and utilities. We didn't spend $1 million on activists. We used our own funds for that. Sure you did. But where government is uniquely positioned to help people commit fraud is the bureaucracy within government. Again, it's complicated. Multiple agencies, multiple departments, all getting money from different pots of money, commingling it, and then shoving money out the door. Add to that the layer of inherent laziness by far too many people in government. For example, so much fraud could have been prevented if bureaucrats handing out cash had just asked simple questions, like looking up business addresses on Google Maps. But that would depend on people taking initiative, and from where I sit, far too many people in government don't bother to ask questions about where that money comes from or where it goes. To talk about fraud, I'd like to welcome back Jonathan Williams to the show. He is the president and also the chief economist at ALEC, that's the American Legislative Exchange Council. You can find out the great work that they do by heading to alec.org. Jonathan, it is great to talk to you again.
Well, it's great to be back on the show as always, my friend. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's kind of weird actually to talk to you twice in the same quarter. That's kind of rare for us.
Yeah, no, that's right. It's all good. It's all exciting things to talk about, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And the real reason for this interview was because an alert by one of your staff members saying that you guys are starting to focus more on fraud, and you've got some key involvements with what used to be DOGE. And so now they've got the Vance task force there. So talk to us a little bit about how you guys launched your own government efficiency coalition.
But, you know, this is something that's really in some ways new, but in some ways longstanding ALEC work. I mean, some people may not think of ALEC in the light of, you know, waste, fraud and abuse investigations or oversight. But we'd like to change that perception because, you know, for many years, as you know, Mark, I've been here nearly 20 years now, believe it or not, hard to believe. But, you know, when we've been at this in terms of good government and free market, limited government policies, and we've developed some great pieces of model policy coming out of the financial crisis, even to say, what can state legislators do to stop the overspending, to get government down to a priority-based budget, right? And that's something our good friend Bob Williams from Washington State, who I know you met, was out with us many times out on the West Coast for legislator events as a former legislator himself. And, you know, he really brought this to us to say, you know, what is the role of the legislator? The one thing that legislators are constitutionally required to do is pass a budget. And in 49 of the 50 states, it has to be a balanced budget, at least on paper, right? I mean, California, everyone kind of gets the joke. It's not really a balanced budget in California, but in many states, they take that very seriously. And so in our mission to help educate America's lawmakers on good public policy is a core ALEC mission of a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization as we are. One of the best things that we can do is help give legislators the tools to be successful at meeting that constitutional objective as a legislator to pass a budget and to make sure that that budget is sound, protects taxpayers. And at the end of the day, one of the most important things to do is look for wasteful spending, and especially fraud and abuse in government spending. And so, yeah, you know, more recently, now we've created the ALEC Government Efficiency Coalition. This is something that Vivek Ramaswamy helped us launch at the ALEC meeting about 18 months ago in Washington, D.C. And, you know, we were very excited to see the Trump administration's renewed focus on this, whether it was Elon Musk and the DOGE effort. But now that, you know, certainly continues in the vice president's new task force created by President Trump on things to address waste, fraud, and abuse at the federal level. We've also worked very closely with our friends at the Office of Management and Budget in the White House, and Russ Vogt and his team continues to do yeoman's work on examining ways getting spending under control in Washington. There's a lot, as you know, Mark, there's a lot yet to do.
Oh, yes.
But just the idea that there's this new effort to do something as common sense as address waste, fraud, and abuse has us very excited that we can help raise that awareness and bring the voices of America's state legislators to this discussion who have been at it for many years.
Well, it is common sense, and you would think this would have been one of the top priorities of government, was to keep an eye out for fraud and to prevent that. And yet, for some reason, we're finding out that there are billions of dollars out there that is being fraudulently taken from taxpayers. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent had said that, according to their estimates at the Treasury Department, there's about $600 billion of fraud taken from the federal government. Is that what you guys are finding, or is it more than that?
Well, I mean, certainly don't dispute what the secretary has found there. And then when you look at all levels of government, right, I mean, the levels of waste, fraud, and abuse just continue to expand potentially, right? And the opportunity to address it, I think, is even as important at the state and local level. I mean, one of the things that, you know, we continue to do is work with our state lawmakers. In fact, one of the oversight committee hearings here in Washington, D.C., that Chairman Comer of House Oversight Committee convened, was the Minnesota state lawmakers, bringing them in. Of course, then subsequently, he's had the attorney general and the governor of Minnesota in to help, try to defend their situation there in Minnesota with the just horrific examples that have been highlighted at large in the media now for many weeks. But, you know, those were ALEC legislators that were sitting there talking about that experience. And so I think we have a unique opportunity as an organization to have our 2,000 plus members across the states help tell those stories, and whether it's to congressional oversight type efforts there, to the White House and the vice president's efforts, or to the media, and to raise this discussion. And the other thing that I think doesn't get nearly enough discussion in all this, Mark, is the waste, fraud, and abuse that can happen at the local level of government. This is something that Governor Ron DeSantis, I think, has done an incredible job with the Florida effort through the CFO's office. There's a statewide elected position in Florida that are looking at city and county budgets that are bloated, and there's a ton of waste and fraud and abuse potential there, especially as it relates to these federal funds that it's during the Biden administration and during the Obama administration. There was a clear effort, I think, at least personally, that those federal funds would be devoted to local units of government to bypass the scrutiny and oversight at the state legislative level. And so there's, I think, a lot to be uncovered and found when it comes to local opportunities to identify waste, fraud, and abuse as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, it seems like the more we look into this, the more it looks like there are open avenues for committing fraud. And I think that's been one of the shocking things. Certainly, you had mentioned what Biden had done. He actually limited, if I remember correctly, how many times it was either Medicaid or Medicare, maybe it was even Social Security, how many times per year they could actually look to see if somebody's enrolled in that shouldn't be. Am I remembering that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there were limitations on the ability of states to try to do their job to identify waste, fraud, and abuse. There was limits on that to how many times per year you could check for Medicaid fraud, for instance. And so one of the great things of the One Big Beautiful Bill is, as we've talked about on the show, Mark, is, you know, the ability now to address this Medicaid piece of it, to stop the payments from going to people who shouldn't have been getting in the first place. Yes. And to change the incentive structure instead of prohibiting states from checking at eligibility to actually incentivizing it and to say this is absolutely the thing that should be done at the state level.
Yeah. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Lots more to talk about on today's show with Jonathan Williams talking about fraud. Everyone stay with us. And welcome back. We're talking to Jonathan Williams today. He is the president and chief economist over at ALEC. That's the American Legislative Exchange Council. Their website is alec.org. And so on today's show, we're talking about fraud and uncovering that. And that's one of the your new initiatives there, the Government Efficiency Coalition. So you guys have been working, as I understand it anyway, you guys have been working with a direct line to Vice President Vance's task force. So what has that partnership looked like?
Well, I mean, I think just taking a step back from this, the Trump administration, both Trump first administration and now the second Trump administration, you know, in the careers of many of our ALEC state lawmakers, some of whom have served for 20 or 30 years at this point, you talk to them and there has been a historic, and I don't think that's a overstatement, the word, there's been a historic partnership between the Trump administration and state and local elected officials to deepen the ties between the levels of government when it comes to coordinating around good public policy. And so this, I think it's been an incredible achievement of this Trump administration, both one and two, that they don't get enough credit for is the outreach to the state and the local officials. And so, you know, we've had the opportunity, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, to work with the Office of Management and Budget, for instance, and many other functions there within the executive branch and different agency intergovernment affairs type leads, and sometimes the secretaries and their teams directly to help bring the prospective ALEC lawmakers to the discussion and to take back many of these areas of common interest and policies, such as addressing waste, fraud, and abuse and overspending and our national debt issues, kind of all together, and to talk about what we can do. And this is why the Government Efficiency Coalition was formed, is to support the efforts of the administration and moreover, to support a good principle based framework around what are the policies that will actually move the needle on this. And so every month we host a webinar with sometimes a member of Congress, sometimes a member of the administration. We had the Office of Management and Budget on the last ALEC Government Efficiency Coalition giving an update, for instance. And then we invite state lawmakers to talk about their state level efforts on addressing waste, fraud, and abuse. And just the coordination around information of what's being done is just so important to make sure that the individuals who are helping to lead these efforts are gleaning from the best practices and successes and mistakes and what can be done to sharpen the pencil and look even deeper for waste, fraud, and abuse. Because the more you uncover these things, I mean, certainly the bad actors, I think, realize that they're going to have to run deeper for cover at this point. And so I think continuing this discussion, looking for ways to enhance these opportunities is exactly what we're going to continue on a monthly basis. One great example, this month, we had Governor Greg Abbott's team give an update on their new efforts on using AI-powered deregulation, for instance. And they kind of took a page from what Governor Glenn Youngkin did here in Virginia with that to say, you know, AI can be used for some very good things that probably by bad actors could be used for some very bad things. But one of the things that government can do to use AI to get to behalf of taxpayers to get to waste, fraud, and abuse issues is turn it loose on overspending, turn it loose on the regulatory code. And so We had Governor Abbott's office give an update on what they are seeing and the kind of savings that they're already seeing in the early efforts of this execution. I think it was over $100 million in savings that they've seen so far there in Texas. As they say, they do everything bigger in Texas. So I expect that number to grow going forward.
Just to back up a little bit, because in that last segment I talked about there are avenues for fraud that I think are being uncovered now. And a lot of it seems to be around helping the poor. And I noticed that that seems to be one of the key features of what the Vance task force is looking at. They've talked about looking at SNAP. They've looked at talking about Medicaid. And these are all ones that I think a lot of people would say, well, these are programs helping the poor. So I think it's because under the guise of kindness and charity, the government, both the federal and the state governments, are so busy shoving money out the door that we're not paying attention to where it's going. Is that a fair assessment?
Well, I mean, in some cases, I think that's right. There's maybe the wrong incentives there, right? Is to get money out the door quickly versus judging effectiveness of the way that government spends money, or even the effect of Medicaid, for instance, a very important topic to talk about in this area, just being up there at the White House for some of the briefings that they've done for state legislators that we are able to participate in as well. You hear from folks like the Domestic Policy Council in the White House talking about who the largest groups are that receive Medicaid now across the United States, because when you think about Medicaid, you think of the disabled or the the elderly and the poor, those that can't work, let's say. It turns out of all the groups that receive Medicaid support now, there's a chart that will always stick with me. The largest group of recipient now of Medicaid funds, as it relates to the expanded Medicaid under Obamacare, right, the expansion of population, is able-bodied working age adults with no children. Yeah. And, for those that don't follow the ins and outs of Medicaid, that really should be something that keeps people up at night. You know, we've designed as a nation Medicaid to be that social safety net that people at least have the idea that it's supposed to help those truly in need, those that cannot work, those that are disabled, and those that need to take care of dependent children. And it turns out, especially because of Obamacare, that's turning out not to be the case. Mm. Now, obviously, separate from even fraudulent activity, but just a rethinking about what are these programs for? What are the incentives? And to your point, Mark, I mean, maybe the incentive, unfortunately, is for government to get the money out the door to show success by spending more money versus looking at who are we actually helping with this money that's being supported.
Yeah, that would make much more sense. Okay, let's go and take a break a little bit earlier. This next question is going to take a bit to unpack. Everyone stay with us. More with Jonathan Williams. He is the president and chief economist at ALEC, ALEC.org. If you want to go check them out. Coming up, it's not just do-good spending, there's something else tying all that fraud together. And welcome back. We're talking about fraud today here on the iSpire Radio Show. We're doing that with Jonathan Williams. He is the president and chief economist over at ALEC, American Legislative Exchange Council. Their website is alec.org. We'll link that up on today's show page on iSpyRadio.com. Head to iSpyRadio.com/16-23. You'll find links to them and a whole bunch of other research material that we'd put together to build out this show. So, Jonathan, we were talking about the fraud avenues, and a lot of this is helping the poor, and it's getting these monies out the door. And my thinking is we're shoving it out the door so fast, we're not bothering to look where it goes. And I notice it's not just fraud for the poor, because that's a good guise. But a lot of these areas of fraud, massive fraud, tend to be left-wing policies. A lot of people think of helping the poor, that's sort of a Democrat issue. Medicaid, Medicare, nationalized, socialized medicine, all of that, that's kind of left-wing. But also things like green energy, that's left-wing ideology. Environmental issues and climate change. I mean, there was trillions of dollars being shoved at climate change over the years. And now the big one, of course, is healthcare. So as far as holding people responsible, because that to me is the essence of fraud. I know somebody that committed fraud, took advantage of the Betsy grants, and it was an energy tax credit here in Oregon. And he stole, I think, about $50,000 and paid a very small fine. Spent like a week or two in jail, maybe a month, but that was it. He got to keep the rest of the money. Where is the sense in that? I mean, people need to be held responsible, but not just the people that commit the fraud, the people that allow the fraud. So is that something that, your task force is looking at, or the Vance task force is looking at, in terms of holding bureaucrats accountable? Because this wouldn't happen if bureaucrats weren't either complicit or too lazy to look.
Well, it's a great point. And, you know, one of the things that we are looking at doing, and this is a brand new function at ALEC, is we've just in the last year created a new task force at ALEC on process and procedures, which deals with everything from election integrity to ballot type access issues and referendum and initiative process, for instance. But now is going to have more of an oversight function as well. And so one of the things that we are encouraging is developing some model pieces of legislation on oversight. We just started with the creation of a statement of principles that you can find at ALEC.org, statement of principles on legislative oversight. One of the things that in some cases is missing at the state level is to have a state auditor, for instance. You would think it would be a no-brainer to say it must have somebody that is responsible, because, I mean, to your point, there needs to be some line of accountability to say, you know, if there's going to be whistleblowers, if there's going to be investigations and audits done, you know, who is that individual, or who are those individuals at the state level that have that responsibility? And when things are not done or not found, is there kind of recourse to say, hey, somebody's not doing their job here to uncover the fraud? And, you know, who are the bureaucrats that, you know, may be complicit in some of this, just as you mentioned? And so I encourage people to check that out. But I know this is something as a brand new task force are going to be continuing to make new pieces of model legislation around this to get to some of those issues, to say, yes, it's those individuals committing the fraud or committing overspending issues, but it's also those that should know better that have oversight that are not exercising. In the case of Minnesota, you listen to the testimony of the Minnesota legislators, and there were plenty of examples, documented examples in that congressional testimony of whistleblowers that were coming forward that were ignored for many years, right? And so there needs to be some sort of accountability. I think it's safe to say in this audience, Mark, since you're not a member of the corporate left-wing media, the media is complicit in this. You know, why in the world is the Minnesota news media not reporting on something that had showed up in documents, showed up in whistleblower reports, and they had sat on it that for whatever reason, maybe it's a political benefit for Governor Walz or others like Attorney General Ellison or others. But I mean, this is a complete travesty that the media is abrogating their responsibility as well.
And not just abrogating their responsibility, but also they seem to be pushing back against people trying to expose the fraud. We certainly saw that with Democrats like Chuck Schumer when they tried to reinstate the Medicare and Medicaid expansion that you've mentioned earlier. They were saying the Trump administration was trying to kick millions of people off of these programs. Well, they were people that didn't belong there. They were getting far too much money, and for some reason, Schumer wanted to keep that fraud going. And in this particular case, it wasn't open fraud like what we see with Minnesota exploiting the system. In this case, the Democrats were overpaying, trying to overpay, and put people on there that shouldn't be getting it because they made too much money. And that, to me, opens the door for fraud for even more people to get something that doesn't belong to them. And it kind of makes you wonder if somewhere on the backside there is some fraud being committed. So why is it, and just even to add to what you're saying, California recently passed the Anti-Nick Shirley Act, which was to prevent people from exposing immigrants that were taking billions of dollars from the state government. So why aren't more people on board with fighting fraud? I don't understand the resistance here, because you would think that everyone would want to expose and eliminate fraud.
Well, you raise a really important question, right? It should raise lots of other questions from there if you have members of the elected class that are fighting fraud prevention or media efforts that are trying to get in the way or demonize those that are looking for fraud. I was asked about the California effort recently on another program. And, you know, certainly there's no way that survives constitutional scrutiny under First Amendment free speech grounds. But I do think, if I remember correctly, I believe the sponsor of that effort was a legislator that happens to be the wife of the Attorney General of the state of California. So there's something very interesting to that connection point as well. But, you know, kudos to the citizens journalists that are out there that taking up this mantle of exposing waste, fraud, and abuse when the traditional mainstream media totally ignores or otherwise fights against those efforts. So people like Nick Shirley, I think, you know, certainly ought to be celebrated for what they're doing and not demonized, and certainly not having their constitutional speech efforts compromised by legislators trying to, for whatever reason, whether they're trying to protect against exposés of what's going on in their backyard for political reasons or otherwise.
Yeah, you would think that they would want to expose this because it what it really does is take money from people who do deserve it and who are supposed to be getting those funds. All right, everyone, stay with us. Another segment has flown by. We'll continue this discussion about fraud with Jonathan Williams from ALEC. Stay with us. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. Talking today to Jonathan Williams. He is the president and chief economist over at American Legislative Exchange Council, their website, alec.org. And so, Jonathan, we've been talking about fraud on this show, and we had mentioned about California passing an anti-Nick Shirley law that would essentially prevent people from investigating fraud and exposing it. And this is just an odd mindset. You would think that, again, more people would want to have fraud exposed, and yet consistently, we see certain people, especially on the left, seem to be really, really resistant of this. And so when you look at what happened there in Minnesota, because that's really where he broke onto the national scene, and what federal prosecutors have estimated is that half or more of the $18 billion in Medicaid funds across 14 of Minnesota's state-run programs may have been stolen since 2018, $9 billion or more. From your vantage point there at ALEC, watching these state programs across the country, do you think Minnesota is a worst-case outlier, or is it closer to the rule than anyone would like to think?
Well, it's hard to say at this point, but I tend to think, you know, that there's probably going to be examples in places like California, New Jersey, Illinois, just to name a few, traditional cases to look for government overspending generally, that you're going to find big numbers. I mean, those are larger states by population, and just by the sheer volume of funds, whether they're federal funds coming into those states or state-level funds or commingled funds, I think there's even greater opportunities to uncover pieces of fraud, waste, and abuse, or some pieces of all of those. I mean, just, yeah, the numbers are staggering, though, coming out of Minnesota. You know, just looking at the announcement from the White House, I mean, where they, you know, say that nearly 9% of the $866 million spent on food stamps in Minnesota each year is estimated to be spent in error. I mean, we're talking about some real money here. And, you know, Minnesota is a state that is not a low tax state. It's a state that could do a whole lot of money in terms of, or do a whole lot of good for taxpayers in reducing tax burdens. And yet, you know, they're on the hook for this kind of level of fraud. I mean, we're not talking a million here, a million there. We're talking hundreds of millions, if not billions, as you pointed out in the broader federal prosecutor investigation of the issue.
Well, I certainly would like to think that they are an outlier, but I don't think that they are, because we have made it so easy to defraud the system. And Joe Rogan had a really interesting podcast. Well, he was, it was Joe Rogan. It was his podcast. Elon Musk was on it. And he was describing, this is, I think, in February of last year, 2025. And he described Social Security as the gateway to fraud. And what he was essentially saying was that once somebody gets awarded a Social Security number, every other federal agency essentially treats them as legitimate and doesn't bother to look into them, whether or not they are in fact legitimate and whether or not they should be getting the various benefits that, you know, that are out there, like Medicaid, SNAP, and housing, unemployment, and so forth. So is that kind of what you guys find, is that that's an accurate description of how the vulnerability works, is that these agencies simply aren't talking to one another, and that opens the door again to that avenue for fraud?
Well, I think that is a one of the reasons probably why you see the effort by the president and the vice president to really utilize a whole of government approach to this by, you know, talking across agencies, for instance, and sharing important information is going to be key in order to rooting out some of this activity. And, you know, just the fact that, you know, people expect that to be the case, that government would be able to share important information on potential fraudulent activity with each other. If the fact that it's not happening or hadn't happened in the past is pretty surprising, I think, to many Americans. They just assume that that would be the normal way of doing business. And that's why, I mean, in the announcement there from the White House, where they're talking about all the coordination and they expect from the different agencies and coordinating with the Attorney General and with Homeland Security, for instance, and looking at those that are ineligible to receive programs that had been. But just that sharing of information, I think, is going to be such a refreshing piece of what this task force is going to look at doing. And that's exactly what we're trying to do as well at the state level with the Government Efficiency Coalition. So the more sharing of information, the less obstruction. I mean, you know, let's not forget that, you know, you mentioned Joe Biden's administration prohibited states from looking at Medicaid fraud more frequently than they needed to do. And the fact that you had the other thing is, you know, Minnesota and something like almost two dozen states had banded together to sue against looking at things to investigate fraud. So, I mean, this is something that very problematic. And to the average American, they just kind of wonder, you know, why can't we get back to common sense on this? And that's exactly what the task force is looking to do.
Well, we have a saying here on iSpy is that if they don't want you to look, there's fraud. And if they sue you, it's because they're involved. So I think it's a pretty good rule looking at these kinds of frauds, especially when you've got states suing them, as you say, just for trying to look. And that makes no sense because, well, anyway, that'll take us down a whole other road. As far as ALEC's flagship anti-fraud model policy, it calls for an enterprise fraud program office. And this would be a state-level office using automated data analytics to cross-reference agency databases and flag improper payments before they go out. That technology obviously exists. And with the advent of AI, it's going to get better and better. So are there states resistant to having that kind of fraud oversight within their own states? Or how far along down the road have you guys gotten with that?
Well, you know, this is a relatively new effort for us, but I mean, we're seeing some great interest from the traditionally strong ALEC states out there. It's probably the ones that are not as involved in the process, the kind of states that are suing the federal government to stop even a basic review of enrollees that are eligible for SNAP, let's say, on that lawsuit that we were just talking about. Mm-hmm. Those are the states that are probably not going to pass the model policy. I mean, they should. We should have this discussion. And I think our ALEC men and women who serve in the legislators in those states, maybe they're in the minority in those states, but they should be raising the awareness around this. But I do think, you know, the success of Governor Abbott's program that I talked about a little bit earlier, the programs of Governor Youngkin, that they've been able to successfully harness the power of AI to look at government efficiency is going to be, I think, inspirational for states across the country to realize, no, you don't have to even hire a ton of new auditors to do this. You train AI and you can have some, you know, proven programs that have worked in other states, and we can apply those best practices as part of the ALEC, you know, family across states to say, here's what's worked in Virginia, here's what's worked in Texas, and here's how easily you can apply it in your state. And, you know, at very little cost to taxpayer. I mean, that's sometimes the pushback, ironically, is on some of these government efficiency efforts. People will try to use the cost against you to say, hey, you're going to spend money on trying to find government efficiencies. And they'll try to say, hey, you shouldn't be spending money on this. I think it's some of the best money that you can spend in order to setting up waste, fraud, and abuse prevention. But sometimes you get that argument, believe it or not.
I am not at all surprised that that's their argument. All right, another segment has flown by. It's fascinating how fast time flies when you're talking about fraud. Everyone stay with us. We'll continue this with Jonathan Williams. And we're back and talking to Jonathan Williams. He's the president and chief economist over at ALEC. That's American Legislative Exchange Council. Their website, alec.org. Simple and easy to remember. So, Jonathan, we've been talking about fraud today. And earlier we were talking about all of these improper payments that are going out the door. And there was I think it was the Inspector General, if I remember right. He had found that between 2015 and 2022, they sent out a mere less than 1% of total payments that were, as they called it, mostly administrative errors, not intentional fraud. But when you look at that, you know, less than 1%, that sounds kind of good. But that's $71.8 billion in improper payments being sent out. So I don't know if that's supposed to reassure you, but it does not reassure me.
No, it does not. You know, and that's real money for people all across the country. I mean, a billion here, a billion there, as the old saying goes, it adds up to real money, right? And you know, that is the percentage sounds low, but I mean, that's it's a huge amount when you put it together. I mean, same thing at the state level. Like, we've had some interesting examples of states that have utilized audits, let's say, to look for improper payments in certain budgets. And that's something that we have ALEC model legislation on. It's one of the longstanding pieces I referenced earlier, that we were, you know, involved in this effort even coming out of the financial crisis, when states were really hurting, you know, revenue wise from the economic slowdown, and they needed to look at things like this. And so, you know, some great case studies from the states, whether it's Medicaid budgets, even transportation budgets, looking at improper payments, you know, and sometimes with recovery audits to find these kind of things, it's actually done at zero cost to the state on a contingency fee basis, too, to have the incentive to say, hey, to root out waste, fraud, and abuse, maybe there ought to be an incentive to find that, whether it's a company that comes up and sets it up sometimes, or even, you know, maybe we have some sort of a incentive for whistleblowers to say, hey, if you're going to talk about waste, fraud, and abuse that exists out there, maybe there needs to be some sort of a program to recognize those individuals that help, you know, blow the whistle on it as well.
Well, I think Scott Bessent has set that up. Maybe it's not fully implemented yet, but he was talking about that. That's what they're going to do, is that he said, if you're a whistleblower and you help expose fraud, you'll get basically a finder's fee for that. But as I understand it, it's based on the fine that's levied and not the amount that was either fraudulently spent or ends up being recovered. So that's unfortunate, because, you know, when it gets to things like fines, unfortunately, that's going to be a couple of years away for you to get your percentage. But also, I hate these fines. It seems to me that if you defraud the government, that fine ought to be 100% of what was stolen. I don't know, what is the fine for these kinds of fraud?
Well, it's a great point. And I do think that's something that has to get fully resolved, because, I mean, people should not have the incentive, obviously, to go do that. And same with whistleblowers, though, in terms of, you know, a lot of folks are probably worried about retribution, right? And so if there's only going to be a negative incentive to come forward with information of fraudulent government spending, I think there needs to be that balance on a potential positive side. So having the secretary also talk about that, I think federally, it's at least a very good discussion to have. However that gets structured, hopefully it makes it worthwhile to those that are able to kind of go out there on a limb and make sure that they can put their voice forward as a whistleblower.
Yeah. Well, earlier we had mentioned that Treasury Secretary Bessent had said that, according to their estimates, $600 billion of fraud happens every year at the federal government. And so if they could eliminate that, just to give people an idea of how big that is enough money to pay for the entire military, both active and retired, their pensions, their paychecks, and all of their benefits and everything else. That was the ask in 2025 from the Trump administration for that kind of allocation, $600 billion. And so when you look at, okay, so if we could eliminate $600 billion just from the federal government, I know that states are also digging into this. And my producer was saying during the break there that it looks like some of these states are finding so much fraud and cutting it that they're able to cut back on taxes. Is that mesh with what you're saying?
Yes, I mean, I think it is. And, you know, every dollar that gets fraudulently spent or is wastefully spent, you know, that is a dollar that cannot be put back into the pockets of taxpayers, right, in terms of tax relief or making that state more competitive. And so there's a really good connectivity here between getting it right on cracking down on waste, fraud, and abuse and government overspending, to getting it right when it comes to protecting taxpayers and hardworking small businesses all across the country, right? I mean, this is something that, you know, the states that are growing, and this is a rich states, poor states story of, you know, Texas, Florida, Tennessee, the fast-growing states without income taxes. You know, one of the reasons they've been able to do that is they keep government more limited. And, of course, that includes stopping wasteful overspending, but it also includes getting back to the basics and avoiding waste, fraud, and abuse overall. And so I think that is a point that doesn't get made enough, but every dollar that is spent fraudulently or is a wasteful dollar spent is a dollar that's taken out of the pockets of the taxpayer in terms of overcollection of tax burden in that state.
Yep, absolutely. So we're certainly seeing some level of investigations here for fraud in Oregon, not nearly enough. I think we're probably one of those states that is going to be resistant to the end on this. There were some interesting things that happened recently here in Oregon. One of the things that they found was that between 2019 and 2022, there was nearly $500 million sent to Medicaid recipients who were simultaneously enrolled in another state. And then also how badly Oregon's Department of Transportation, ODOT, tracks its own money. They were commingling funds from multiple years of federal dollars. And it was so bad when they tried to audit it, they couldn't say for certain whether or not they were even following the federal laws on this. And so now ODOT has promised, oh, we'll totally fix this now, even though they've been saying this for years. But when you hear these kinds of numbers, do you think this is a we caught it and fixed it kind of story, or more along the lines of what else is there that we haven't even found yet?
Right. I wish I could say they caught it and fixed it. I don't know that that's the case. I mean, being completely frank in the situation, right? And one of the things that, you know, I think is important when it comes to information sharing, though, the lacking piece of that is, you know, are people collecting similar types of payments across state lines? And, you know, states not talking to each other. We talked a little bit earlier, even the whole of government approach at the federal level, and maybe in the past agencies not talking to each other. Same thing at the state level. And I think the SAFE system that's being worked on with the White House and comparing notes between states is very important in making sure that people aren't double dipping. I mean, same issue of people potentially registering to vote in multiple states at one point in time, right? Or at the same time and getting ballots sent to them in multiple states or potentially even voting in multiple states. And so Same issue in terms of lack of information sharing across state lines needs to be addressed in this, because I do think that the more you look into that, the more you can find multiple payments from across states.
Yeah, that would not surprise me at all. And again, when you have agencies and their databases not talking to one another, that just opens the door for fraud. Everyone stay with us. We will wrap things up with Jonathan Williams talking about fraud and what may or may not happen right here in Oregon. And welcome back. In our final segment now with Jonathan Williams. He is the president and chief economist over at the American Legislative Exchange Council. And among many things that they do is they offer model policies for states. And so, Jonathan, let's flash forward here to November and going into the next year. If a new Oregon governor just happens to come into office in January, somebody who maybe isn't a Democrat, someone who actually wanted to get the state's fiscal house in order, someone who wanted to prevent fraud and improve government efficiency, what should they be doing?
Well, that's we may need more than a few minutes on that one. But, you know, I think the first thing to do is, you know, a shameless plug for a publication we put together coming out of the financial crisis. We've talked about it many times on the show over the years, is the ALEC State Budget Reform Toolkit. And it was something designed for individuals coming into office or those that are potentially have new ability to shape the way that policy is made at executive branch, legislative branch, or otherwise at the local level. Of how do you get back to basics when it comes to crafting a sound financial and a budget system in a state? How do you have kind of starting from what are the core functions of government and starting from there and working our way out? But then, you know, what are the kinds of audits that you can put into place, whether it's legislatively adopted or done through the executive branch, whether it's the recovery audits of improper payments that we talked about a little bit earlier, whether it's a whole of government performance audit that should be done. I mean, that's a great piece of ALEC model legislation that was based on, I believe, Washington State back when they were involved more in the priority-based budgeting mindset a couple of decades ago under Democrat control there. And so there is so much to be done. A lot of it has to do with starting with the transparency and making sure that the data is there. You know, sunlight is a great disinfectant when it comes to having that government spending data, contracts, local government spending all put up for taxpayers to see. And, you know, whether people actually have a chance to look at it or not, just the fact that people have to produce that kind of data of what is being spent, where it's being spent, the contracts, you know, connecting the checkbooks of even down to the school district level to say, you know, why are property taxes high? How much is government spending? That all needs to be made readily available to taxpayers across the state. So I would start there and start with the transparency and the audit piece. And from that point forward, they're going to find probably a ton of information, unfortunately, in a state like Oregon that may be baked under the surface. But the first step is sunlight, transparency, and auditing based on our budget reform toolkit, I think.
Well, as far as the budget reform toolkit is concerned, is there an Oregon version of that? I assume that if there is, it's probably very simple. It says stop what you're doing and do the opposite. Is that correct?
There is an Oregon version yet, although I'd say, if we had the request from legislators for others there in Oregon, we'd be happy to take what we've done on a 50-state basis and help customize it for the people of Oregon to really hopefully change the trajectory of this great state of Oregon going forward.
Well, that would sure be nice. As far as the other states are concerned, are there some states where there is very little levels of fraud, or at least that has been found so far?
Well, Utah is an example I always like to talk about in rich states, poor states, of course, number one in economic outlook for all 19 editions of the report. One of the things that I think they do quite well is they have a post-audit function to say, those individuals that come in and promise, in some cases, the world to say, you give us a government contract here, you spend government money on this project or that project, you always get great flowery proposals and economic development statistics that sound like it's going to create a ton of jobs and it's going to look amazing, right? But a lot of times people don't follow up to say, all right, now a year later or 5 years later, what was the actual impact for the state? And so one of the great things that I've appreciated from Utah is they do come back and ask those individuals after you got a government grant or after you got an abatement on a property tax or some other government outlay, did you actually do what you said you were going to do? And that question doesn't get asked nearly enough. And so that's something we always point towards in terms of best practices. What are the right questions that lawmakers should ask those individuals that have been recipients of government support to make sure that we get the best ROI on those taxpayer dollars? Once again, not alleging even fraud in that case, but just wise spending of taxpayer dollars. And that's something that I think goes a long way in a state like Utah that has done it right for many, many years. And, the other thing, Mark, and I know we're running out of time here, that Utah does is they keep a great inventory on federal funds as they come into the state. We've talked about that many times. That's a huge area for potential waste, fraud, and abuse just because of the federal outlays coming into the state. Not a lot of oversight sometimes that are done on those federal funds, especially as they go to local units of government. But Utah is really ahead of the curve on analyzing those federal funds and making sure that if you're going to accept the federal funds, that Utah gets a good ROI on those federal support dollars.
Yeah, federal funds. I think that one investigation said it very, very correctly. They're throwing gold bars off the Titanic, unfortunately. So, Jonathan, we are up against the clock. I want to thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me. Always great to join you.
When it comes to things like fraud and fines for people who commit fraud, I think fines should be equally split between the person committing the fraud and the bureaucrat for willful negligence. I suspect we'd suddenly see a lot less of it, don't you think? And speaking of finding fraud, while ALEC doesn't have a fraud hotline for regular citizens, that's not what they do. But what they did do, starting back in 2007, was to push every state in the country to put their spending online where you can actually see it. Oregon has one of those sites. It's at oregon.gov/transparency, and it has the state checkbook. Well, sort of. From my first blush look at it, it doesn't have the specifics it ought to. Yet, maybe with a different governor, we could get a bit more transparency, especially in terms of how the previous governor had spent all that money. Wouldn't that be nice? Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.